The House, please come to order. Would the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please take the roll? Yes, I did.
Thirty-seven members present.
As you probably can note by the chief clerk's frustration, we're having a little problem with the computer this morning. But I think we'll have just proceed down the calendar and call for brief at ease later on to try to work out the problem. Our prayer this morning is by Lieutenant Floyd Bacon of the Salvation Army. Members, please rise.
Heavenly Father, as we come before you this morning, we thank you for your love and care for each of us. We thank you, Lord, that even in the adversities of life, you do not allow us to be tried beyond our endurance. We pray for our government leaders at the national and state levels, for their tasks are large and their responsibilities are heavy. Give them insight and wisdom to deal with the problems with which they are faced. In all that must be accomplished, may we never lose sight of the fact that we must keep you first if we are truly to succeed in life. Give us a good day, Lord, and may we use it for your honor and glory. In Jesus' name, amen.
Speaker, I ask the prayer be spread in the journal.
Hearing no objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal.
Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
As I should have earlier, Mr. Moss and Mr. Metcalf are excused from the call today. I move and ask unanimous consent that Mr. Miles be excused today until plain time.
Hearing no objection, Mr. Miles will be excused from the call until plain time today. Will the chief clerk please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 99th day in House Supplement number 51.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
I move to ask unanimous consent the journal for the 99th day in the House Supplement number 51 be approved as certified by the chief clerk.
Hearing no objection, the motion to approve the Daily Journal will be adopted. Are there any guests for introduction this morning? Mr. Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You and I both have a friend in Gallery B. He's from Eklutna, the village that's in District 8, part of Bush Anchorage. Mr. Peter Ezai is the president of the Eklutna Village Corporation.
Representative Buchholz.
Don't worry, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to introduce our gallery full of people today. However, there is a very important person I would like to introduce to the body, and he's in Gallery A. This gentleman has come to Juneau to perform at the Kimball Pipe Organ tomorrow evening, of which the public is invited at 8 p.m. And he is Dr. Cornejo. He holds a PhD and Doctor of Music degrees from Chicago Musical College, the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, Juilliard School of Music in New York City, a former professor of music of the University of the Philippines, former technical advisor on cultural matters of the late President Carlos P. Garcia, a charter member, League of Filipino Composers, President, Philippine Federation of Music, Inc., and musical director and ambassador of goodwill of the Kiwanis International Club of Manila. Presently, he resides in Seattle as a composer, lecturer, and a concert pianist. Dr. Cornejo.
Are there any other, Mr. Rogers.
Yes, in Gallery A, a constituent of the Anchorage delegation who does a lot of work for us in the rest of the state, Sherry Valentine from Rural Cap.
Are there any other guests for introduction? Messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted herewith for consideration. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 63 by the Rules Committee, proposing an amendment to the uniform rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to standing committees.
Rules.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 260 by the Finance Committee, an act repealing the school tax, providing for refund of school tax payments for the 1980 tax year and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Resources has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 477 amended relating to shooting and firearm safety under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Halford, Eliason, Chatterton, Carney, Cotton, Fuller, Osterbach, and Jaroff. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 477 amended has no further referral. There's a letter from Representative Fred Brown, Chairman of the House Commerce Committee. Dear Mr. Speaker, your Commerce Committee has held confirmation hearings on Dr. George Brenneman for confirmation to the Board of Medical Examiners, Mr. David George to the Board of Marine Pilots, and Ms. Nina Russell and Ms. Ione Lambert to the Board of Hairdressing and Beauty Culture Examiners. These persons were recommended for appointment by Governor Hammond. After meeting and voting on the matter, your Commerce Committee recommends that the above persons be confirmed to the respective boards. Respectfully submitted, signed, Fred Brown. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 399 relating to the membership of the Wood-Tikchik State Park Management Council under consideration. A majority of the committee reports it back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Brown, Phillips, Martin, Barnes, and O'Connell, signing DuPass, Buchholz, Parr, Malone, and Anderson. House Bill 399 has no further referral. The Committee on Finances had House Bill 778 relating to the taxation of electric cooperatives under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 778 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Smith, Roger, Schaefer, Guy, and Haugen. House Bill 778 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 806 relating to heads, deputy heads, and directors of divisions of principal departments of the executive branch and to members of regulatory boards and commissions under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 806 and recommends it do pass and a fiscal notice forthcoming. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, Miller, Eliason, Parker, and Fuller. Signing no recommendation due to being on next committee, Martin. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 806 has a further referral to Judiciary. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
Citation honoring Howard Amos by Representative Guy. House Resolution Number 19 by the Resources Committee for the Special Agriculture Committee, relating to the construction of the Goose Bay to Point McKenzie Road.
Resources.
House Joint Resolution Number 87 by the State Affairs Committee, requesting the United States Postal Service to establish a philatelic service center in Alaska.
State Affairs.
House Joint Resolution Number 88 by the Rules Committee, relating to the memorial adopted by the legislature of the state of Arizona regarding public land policies of the United States and the Western states.
Rules.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of bills.
House Bill 1017 by the Judiciary Committee, an act annulling 15 AAC 5406 and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary.
House Bill 1018 by the State Affairs Committee by request, an act relating to the powers and responsibilities of the Department of Public Safety regarding vehicle registration, establishing penalties and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs.
House Bill 1019 by the Finance Committee by request, an act relating to daycare for children and providing for an effective date.
Hess.
I have no further bills. Oh, excuse me. House Bill 1020 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to energy, establishing a Department of Energy, describing its organization, powers, and duties, and transferring to it the Alaska Council on science and technology and the programs relating to energy presently under other executive departments, boards, and corporations, establishing an executive energy council, establishing an Alaska Energy Research and Development Center in the Department of Energy, amending the Alaska Land Act to withdraw from the Department of Natural Resources responsibility for management of energy resources, amending provisions for representation of the state under the Western Interstate Nuclear Board, reconstituting the membership of boards and commissions which deal with energy, and providing for an effective date.
Resources and finance. Would the House please be at ease? The daily calendar under consideration, would the Chief Clerk please read the first item on the agenda?
House Bill number 192 by Gardner, Anderson, and Miller, an act providing for equalization of the tax resources of municipalities, continuing a portion of the program of state aid for municipal purposes and providing for minimum entitlements and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is at House Bill 192 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 192 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Parker, Chairman, signing do pass as amended, Parr, do pass if amended, O'Connell, do pass as amended, Metcalf and Jaroff, do not pass as amended, Branson, and no recommendation, Carney. The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 192 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 192 Finance and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing DuPass, Freeman, Smith, Guy, and Schaefer. Having no recommendation, McKinnon, Rogers, and Haugen. There were fiscal notes placed on your desk this morning. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Mr. Parr? Objection is noted.
Mr. Speaker, in the CNRA committee report, which caused so much humor a while ago, there was an amendment, which is on page 17 of the CNRA, which said in effect that municipalities might get less money, a smaller share of this revenue sharing pie, than its population was of that of the state. And I'd like to know the reasoning that the Finance Committee used when they decided not to keep that in there, because apparently my district, among some others, is going to be getting less of a total than we were before.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chairman, the changes that were made in the Finance Committee, there were several. One was on, these are changes from the original bill. The only amendment that was made in the CRA committee was the one, Mr. Parr's amendment, which effectively, in my mind, gutted the purpose of their bill. The amendments that were made in the Finance Committee are on page 2, line 20, in the calculations of what constitutes local revenues. The language was added in regards to utility, so that if monies that a municipality received from its citizens for utility fees, not the actual paying for electricity, but the fees that were actually collected would be included as revenue, just as sales tax and property tax and the other things listed in this definition. At the end of the bill on page 17, line 13, there is a grandfather clause in the bill that provides that nobody will get less than they are getting now. The Finance Committee extended this, I think it was Mr. Rogers' amendment, from a 3-year grandfather clause to a 5-year grandfather clause. Also, probably the most significant amendment on the bottom of the page on line 25, the amount of revenue sharing was up from $27 million to $31 million. So, in fact, no municipality is going to get less. In fact, almost everybody gets significantly more. Now, the percentage of the pies are obviously change around all over the place, and that information is in computerized form and is available if anybody's interested in the specifics that comes out. But what happens here is that last year the legislature appropriated $20 million for revenue sharing. $8 million of that 20 went to the hospital construction and hospital funding programs. Only $12 million went into revenue sharing. It was divided up amongst the communities. This bill would provide a total of $31 million, which would put $23 million into revenue sharing at a minimum. That means that we have increased the amount of revenue sharing revenues about 50%. Hence, everybody is able to get more. And in fact, both the Fairbanks borough and city would receive substantially more revenues than they did last year. The percentage of what they get changes slightly. It drops several tenths of a point in the Fairbanks borough. And in the city of Fairbanks, its percentage of revenue sharing would increase about 1%. So, and if you go through and you look at this, you'll see some percentages of the pie go up, some percentages go down. But basically, as a general rule, because of we're putting so much more money into revenue sharing, everybody's receiving significantly more. I would urge the body to adopt the Finance Committee substitute.
Mr. Parr.
I'll yield, Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was no recommendation on this because I support the intent of Representative Parr's amendment in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. But we did have a serious problem with the bill as it came up with that amendment in it. We had two sections which were sort of in conflict. One section says that every municipality receives at least $25,000, and the other section that said that no one gets less than their per capita share of the pie. Well, in order for the smallest village to get $25,000 and for everyone else to get at least their percentage of the pie, we would have had to raise the total for revenue sharing to, I think it was $220 million in order that everyone gets the exact percent and that $25,000 gets in. And the committee was reluctant to make that big of an increase in revenue sharing. As a result, sort of as the compromise was the five-year grandfather clause. I think the bill may still have a couple defects, but I do think the Finance Committee substitute ought to be adopted.
Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I did ask that someone from the Finance Committee explain their reasoning, and I believe Mr. Rogers has done that very well. I don't believe it the speaker before him did answer my concern that my district was getting a lower share than it had before completely. But I do think Mr. Rogers gave a very good explanation as to the reasons why the committee dropped that amendment out.
Are there further objections to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 192? Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 192 is adopted. Are there any amendments to the bill? Would the Chief Clerk please read the amendment?
Excuse me, amendment number one by Mr. Parr. Page 10, line 4. Delete in the unorganized borough. Line 7, after borough, insert having fire protection power. Line 12, after borough, insert having fire protection power.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment number one.
Objection is noted. Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the bill as it stands permits the revenue sharing money to go to volunteer fire departments in the unorganized borough.
and nowhere else. What the amendment would do is to permit revenue sharing to a volunteer fire department in an organized borough which does not have the fire protection power. I don't know how many other cases this applies. I know it applies in the borough in which I reside, in which I represent here. If the borough has fire protection power, of course it can pass along revenue sharing to the fire department. But if it doesn't have fire protection power, I don't think it can do that. And at least that's the word we had gotten before on these various powers when I was on the assembly in Fairbanks. So we do have at least, I know, three volunteer fire departments in the borough, and I'm sure that other large boroughs may not be in a position to have a borough fire department. I'm sure that the Mat-Su, for example, as large as it is, would have a great deal of trouble having a borough fire department. And yet there might be a volunteer fire department organized out in one of the very rural areas and could use some support in this area from the state. I'm sorry I'm not able to get a computer run on this. I haven't seen a computer run on the bill yet, and so I don't know the cost of this. I don't think it'd be very high because most of the volunteer fire departments are very small. They're serving 200-300 people, of course, or maybe in some cases several hundred. That's the only change the amendment recommends, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gardner.
Could the clerk please reread the amendment?
Amendment number one by Mr. Parr, page 10. Line 4, delete in the unorganized borough. Line 7, after borough, insert having fire protection power. Line 12, after borough, insert having fire protection power.
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak in support of this amendment. One of the biggest, I spoke of defects in the bill that I considered, and one of the reasons I went no rec, was the problem of volunteer fire departments. We've got a lot of area to cover in the Fairbanks North Star Borough for fire protection. We've got several volunteer fire departments which are doing a really good job. Others are in the process of formation. It's having a really beneficial impact on insurance rates, on saving of property, and on saving of life. And I would be very reluctant to vote for a bill which did not continue the state aid to those fire departments. And we do have the particular problem of our second-class borough not having fire protection power, so they couldn't do it as a borough-wide, on a borough-wide basis.
Mr. Guy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like some further clarification as to the proposed amendment. An organized borough having fire protection power. What does having a protection fire protection power exactly entail?
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, it's my understanding that the unified governments in Anchorage and Juneau and Ketchikan and Sitka are all boroughs that have fire protection authority. Probably Fairbanks is the only urban and the surrounding area, semi-urban and some rural areas, that has a borough that is considered to be part of an urban area that does not have area-wide fire protection powers. Because we have not unified, only the city of Fairbanks has those powers. The borough does not. So outside the city, but still within the borough, the fire protection that you have is Ketchikan, or if you're considered to be within the jurisdiction of the university's fire department, or if you're one in one of the service areas that have a volunteer fire department, you may have fire protection. I can also see a problem arising that if we do not pass this amendment, then it may be a disincentive for some of the organizing plans that some people in the rural areas have for organizing further boroughs. And I'm thinking, for instance, of the proposed Yukon Flats borough. If we do not pass the amendment, then they will see that if they organize a borough, they will lose any monies that they're getting for any volunteer fire departments unless they organize a borough that has those powers. And then the problem is that their constituents will then want to have area-wide fire protection as though they were in an urban area, which may be impractical. So I support the amendment, and I don't think it does much harm to the unorganized borough or the rural areas in the unorganized borough.
Mr. Guy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to further clarification as to the language, proposed language here. Would having a protection power mean that a community or like in a village would have to have mechanical apparatuses to be able to be eligible to become volunteer fire department?
Mr. Rogers.
In answer to Representative Guy's question, the fire protection power we're talking about would be the assumption by the borough, and this would only refer to organized boroughs, of the powers of giving fire protection. And since this says serving an area not in an organized borough having fire protection or in a city, that means so that it would be volunteer fire departments that are outside organized boroughs with that power or outside cities. So the volunteer fire departments in the rural areas would not be affected at all by this amendment.
Mr. Gardner.
Could we have an at ease?
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, since there seems to be some concern about the language of the amendment, I'm going to withdraw it, and I believe there will be another amendment offered to do the same thing.
Okay, then your motion then is to withdraw amendment number one, hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Rogers.
The clerk has another amendment.
Amendment number two by Rogers and Parr. Page 10, line 4. Delete in the unorganized borough. Line 6, delete and serving an area not in an organized borough or a city. Line 11, delete in an area not in an organized borough or a city.
Mr. Rogers.
I'd move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Hearing no objection, amendment number two is adopted. Are there any other amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 192, or rather Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 192, be considered engrossed and advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 192, amended by the House, will be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage. Is there any debate? Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask for an explanation of one point that I didn't quite...
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
I think the clerk has to read the bill in third reading.
You are correct.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 192, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act providing for equalization of the tax resources of municipalities, continuing a portion of the program of state aid for municipal purposes, and providing for minimum entitlements and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask for an explanation of one portion of the bill I don't quite understand. Mr. Speaker, the bill refers to taxing unit, and it's talking at the bottom of page 1 and top of page 2 about the entitlements. There's a formula derived and which relates to the sum of the locally generated revenue of the taxing unit and so forth. And then, which I guess as I understand it, except for hospitals and volunteer fire departments and so forth, determines sort of the base amount of revenue sharing that a taxing unit gets. But when on page 6, taxing unit is defined, and it's page 6, line 18, it means municipality and in a borough or a unified municipality, a service area, or the entire area outside cities. And Mr. Speaker, what I'm not clear about, and I'd hope I'd get an explanation of from the appropriate person, would be how this works. For example, in the borough in which I live, there are a number of service areas. To take the simplest case, and it's usually the one, a service area is organized out of town somewhere simply to maintain their roads. And they'll maybe put 1 mil levy on themselves, or perhaps 2 mils, depending on how much work they have to do on their roads. And as I understand this, they would be a taxing unit, and there would be revenue apportioned from the revenue sharing to that service area. And there would also be revenue sharing going to the borough in which that service area is. And I have no objections to this, I guess. I'm just trying to find out exactly how this thing is supposed to work.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think the idea here was to continue the existing practice where the money would be going back to the service area and actually be utilized there, rather than having the under the existing law now, service area would the money would pass on through to them because that's what the service was for state. So this was an effort to preserve that existing situation rather than have a municipality, for instance, get all the money and then decide that it did not want to spend any money in a given service area.
Mr. Barr?
Mr. Speaker, I understand the intent, I guess, now, but could perhaps Mr. Gardner or someone else could answer the question, and we'll just take, I hate to keep using my borough, but it's the one I know most about. Does this mean that the borough then gets its money, and then on top of that, there's an amount allocated for each of those service areas on top of the basic entitlement that the borough gets? Is that what happens?
Does anyone wish to address a question? Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chairman, there's not a, I may not be answering Mr. Parr's question, because I'm not sure I understand it, but there's not an additional sum. There would only be one sum other than those sums that were based on the specific sums for roads and hospitals and those categorical grants that are still kept.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes, I believe in answer to the question, the equalization that's spoken to on page 1 and 2 it's non-categorical funding and would go to the municipality as a whole. The money that goes to the service areas comes out of section for hospitals on page 7, for roads on page somewhere in here, further back. Anyway, the section on taxing units only applies to general revenue sharing and not to the categorical for roads, hospitals, and volunteer fire departments. So I guess the answer to the question is that there would not be the equalization non-categorical funding for the service areas.
Mr. Speaker? Yes, I'm concerned that this bill has not addressed the financial problems which are encountered by the hospitals, particularly in the smaller communities. However, since I'm confident that this will be addressed in other legislation, I guess I'll support this bill.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to have to confess ignorance on this particular bill. I haven't been in either one of the committees that's passed through. I suspect that maybe about 75% of those on the floor are in the same position. So the only way I can really bring this into perspective is to relate what's happening now and what would happen on this bill. And to project that further, we'll have to have similar communities. I suspect maybe we'll take Kodiak as an example. They have a borough and also a city, which is being funded under the present system. And Ketchikan is another example. They have a borough and a city, which is being funded under the present system. So as I interpret this, it says that, for instance, the present time, Kodiak's getting $216,852. And under this proposal, as I see it, they'll receive $367,000. And Ketchikan, this is a similar community under certain circumstances, which are quite similar, would receive $282,000 at the present time, and under this bill, they'd receive $777,000. So to look a little further, the increase in these two communities would be $645,000. And out of that $645,000, Kodiak would get $150,000, and Ketchikan would get the difference, which is around $500,000. When in fact they started out originally with only a $70,000 difference between the entitlement under the present system, and it increases now to where they get approximately $500,000 more under this proposal. So how do we crank this into the bill? What really creates this problem or creates this differential?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, may I just go through an entire explanation of the bill to explain why you would come out with any numbers. I introduced this bill about 3 years ago, and that was after, I think, the Representative Cotton and Representative Miller had spent several years working on a different revenue-sharing reform bill that they had worked on, which did not pass the legislature. So it's been in the legislature for 3 years now and had quite a lot of hearings and input. And in fact, 2 years ago, after the bill failed to make it through the committee system, I worked with the Alaska Municipal League, and they spent a lot of time working on the bill. And I think there was a pretty unanimous agreement from the Municipal League on the bill. They recommended considerable amount of changes from the original bill I introduced. So I reintroduced the bill with those changes. There were some municipalities, I think, that were unhappy about it, but generally the vast majority of them saw it as an improvement. And some of those recommendations were to retain some of the categorical grant programs, such as the hospitals and roads, and some people may still think that those maybe should be folded in too. The purpose of the bill is to design a revenue sharing system that maybe has a little more relation to need in it. Originally, revenue sharing was founded on the concept that the state had some oil wealth that it wished to funnel back to the municipalities and provide some tax relief to the taxpayers. Well, the system that was designed, I think, was a good system, but I think this provides for an improvement, because the present system only gives you money based on providing a service. It doesn't matter how much you spend on the service. If you provide fire protection or police protection or planning and zoning, you therefore qualify for X amount of dollars times the number of people in your municipality. That doesn't mean you need the money. It doesn't mean you're spending a lot. It doesn't mean you're taxing your citizens heavily to provide that service. It only means that you qualified because you provided that service. And of course, we picked the services that would qualify, and they were added on over the years. What this attempts to do is to measure two things, three things really. It still uses the population base as one portion of the formula, but it also measures what is the local government taxing its citizens in terms of all the taxes, whether property taxes, sales taxes, and other forms of revenues it raises from its citizens. So it tries to get at that basic issue: is how much effort are the people putting out, and how much relief maybe should the state try to provide to those communities which are taxing themselves to provide services. The other thing it measures is the wealth through the the property tax base of the community. A lot of communities are fortunate that they have industrial and other property and a lot of other property that they can tax, and they can generate a lot of revenues on a moderate or low mill or sales tax rate. Other communities, and I think especially in the rural areas and some of our very small communities, they just don't have a tax base. The state hasn't been seen fit to put 2,000 or 3,000 state employees into their community to build a community with a stable revenue base. A pipeline hasn't gone through their committee. They don't have some other industrial base. So that's kind of how it goes, and we all know that those distributions of the wealth which the municipalities can tax differ. So this attempts to measure those factors, and I think tries to, in a better way, get at the original proposition of revenue sharing was providing some tax relief. And I think what we should try to do is provide the tax relief to those people who are really struggling. There's our communities in the state who have nearly the legal limit of mill rate and a substantial sales tax, and they're not getting that much services because they don't have much tax base. Other communities are more fortunate. This bill tries to recognize some of the differences there and measure how much people are taxing themselves. So there are still some of the entitlement programs such as roads, health facilities, and health construction, the volunteer fire departments, that are still go out on a categorical program. This somewhat mitigates what they might have lost otherwise. So in a sense, I guess this is somewhat of a compromise from the original bill, which would have taken out all of the categorical programs. There's another section of the bill which I think is important. It provides for a minimum entitlement program of $25,000 plus the cost of living differential to any organized municipality in the state. A lot of our small communities with 200, 300, 400 people, they can't seem to get off the ground. They don't qualify for a lot of the state and federal programs that we've set up, but they still need to make progress with their communities. This gives them a base level of funding on which they can try to operate, and I don't think it's a large amount of money. This about $2.5 million would go into this program, and I think that will benefit them. The rest of the bill doesn't necessarily benefit those small communities because they're not getting much now and they wouldn't get much under the formula. But this would give them a base level of funding on which to try to operate as a municipality. And there are certain minimum requirements in the bill that they have to meet to show that they really are a municipality and they just don't file and become a municipality to get the money. But that's how in answer to Mr. Lyason's question, it's because of this formula that the distribution of what everybody gets changes. I think it's probably very similar to what happened with the Education Foundation. Everybody was getting a certain amount, and everybody tried to look at what they would get under the new formula. And it redistributed the money, even though nobody was getting less. And I think this is a similar thing here. Some communities are getting more. Nobody's getting less than they're getting now. Some communities are getting an increase. Some communities are getting a larger increase, and that's because of the formula. And I think it's a good formula that tries to really measure what the citizens are taxing themselves and tries to give some accordingly state support.
Mr. Lassen?
Speaker, that still really doesn't answer the question relative to the similar communities. The big difference, I suspect, is in the bill here somewhere. However, my community takes a pride in the fact that they keep our millage rate low, and we have a very conservative government. We have all the services any community in the state has. And I just wonder if, in fact, if we were to increase our millage and to raise more taxes locally, would we be in effect returning more money from the state into revenue sharing? Would we receive more from the state under this formula if we increased our taxes? In other words, is this an incentive to raise your millage in order to receive more state revenues, or would it work that way?
Mr. Gardner?
It wouldn't work that way for this reason. It's true that if you raised your sales or property tax or other things, you would get more state money, but it's not in a direct proportion because of this. We're going to appropriate X amount of dollars in this case into the revenue sharing. We're proposing $23 million. Okay, just because you raise your share doesn't mean you proportionately go up. It just redistributes the whole pie, so you don't get dollar for dollar or anywhere near that. So I don't know what it exactly would come out because you'd have to look at the size of the community in regard to the formula, but it would be a small incremental increase relative to what you'd have to tax yourself at the local level. So I think it would, if nothing else politically, it'd probably be a real net loss to be on a borough assembly or city council arguing, well, if we raise our taxes $4 or $5 here, we might get a dollar over there. I don't think you're going to make much headway, and I would give more credit to our local borough assembly and council people than the fact that they would just try to raise taxes to get more state money, because obviously they could have done that in under the old program by simply adding on new services. And I know in my own borough they could have added several services in the borough and qualified for state money, but that really was never the local issue. The local issue was whether they wanted to provide the service. So I don't think there's enough incentive here. If it was in the order of a dollar for a dollar or $2 for $1, it would, but it's kind of the reverse of that way because of the formula and the fact that if we put one or two more million dollars into the total revenue sharing, is distributed out. So it works the other way around. It distributes back out if somebody was to raise a revenue.
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the rationale on the bill is to base the equalization on the wealth of the local community. And what is used on page 2 is the wealth of the local community is the assessed real property, and I'm curious as to why the choice was made on real property and not the total of real and personal property. For example, some areas of the state, you've got a huge number of fishing vessels, perhaps, which would dilute that number in those areas. Other parts of the state have other forms of personal property, which are perhaps also an indicator of wealth of the community. And I'd like to hear the rationale for that.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, originally, as I said, the bill was a lot different when I first introduced it. And some accommodations have been made to a whole lot of people who objected to the way it was. Originally, it was a really great formula, except that people swore up and down they couldn't understand it. Now, I think the reason they didn't understand, some of them didn't want to understand it, but the original bill was a lot more complex in the formula because it really tried to go at the wealth of the community, because simply looking at a property tax base, and in this case only one major form of property tax base, doesn't necessarily measure all the wealth, because there, you know, there could be, you have not only boats, airplanes, all kinds of other cars, other forms of personal property. Some people tax them, some people don't. But we also, in the original form, we had the issue of what is the income of the people who live there, because some areas have, such as this town, has a very high average income, which is an asset to this community, and it's a lot of money spent here. They can raise money off of sales tax and other forms of taxation. Whereas another community, because the people who live there are basically much poorer, they don't have, you know, much personal wealth to tax in terms of sales tax. But because those things were a little bit more complicated than people could understand or were in favor of, those portions were deleted. And so this was kind of the basic agreement that I worked with the Municipal League to come out with something that all the municipalities could be comfortable with. And on the other hand, there was these, as Mr. Rogers knows, other forms of revenue, again, that I felt that, you know, was some reasonable argument and tried to accommodate those concerns of people with the municipal utility revenues and all these other forms of revenues that are raised from people, which benefits certain communities who wanted those amendments in. So I guess the answer is there isn't a horrendous amount of logic in terms of the total wealth. There probably are better definitions of measuring the wealth, but this seemed to be one that was agreeable to most people.
Mr. Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, the Speaker mentioned the fact this community here, he brought the subject up, and this is a wealthy community, and the state has seemed to put a number of thousands of people in this community as state employees. They have a good tax base. But this bill shows that under the present revenue sharing formula, Juneau receives $514,000 a year. It's $514,000. And here's where I lose the logic. When you talk about wealth in the community, you talk about a tax base, you talk about state employees. Under this proposed legislation, Juneau is going to receive $1,483,000. three times as much as they're receiving now. And that's, I take my community as an example, which this is how I'm relating to this bill, is the only thing we have is what we're receiving now, what we will receive under this bill. Now, my community is receiving $234,649. And that's based upon a $12 million revenue sharing pot. And then under this particular legislation, we increase it $10 million is tossed in that pot. $10 million, okay? And out of that $10 million, our share is $30,000 out of $10 million. And Juneau's share is close to $1 million. So this is where I lose the sense of equal distribution of monies to revenue sharing. It seems like it's not equal. It seems like it discriminates against communities who have a good tax base and a low millage rate. And that's the rationale I'm losing, Mr. Speaker. I just don't see how it relates to a fair division of revenue sharing.
Mr. Gardner.
I think that, you know, if people insist on looking at, you know, what are we getting now and assume that that's what they deserve and ought to get, and then if they don't get more, they're going to be unhappy. Finance Chairman knows I complained to him about the foundation bill because I mysteriously found out, and I was looking at my community after kind of was a little late, that my community has the second highest local effort in this state to support its schools. So I thought, well, boy, we're probably going to get a lot of relief under this. Well, I looked, and we got zero. And I said, well, how could that be? And they said, well, that's, you know, we tried to take care of everybody, and, you know, maybe it didn't pan out for everybody, right? And you know, I voted for the bill, let's put it that way. But knowing that we were going to get zero, and his community, which has about the same local tax effort, was going to get $3 million, right? And I had a hard time seeing the logic of that. But, you know, it was a package, and there was a lot of other things in there that, and it was something that was a statewide program, and it was an effort in the people involved to improve the education funding for everybody. Certainly my community wasn't getting less. They're getting, you know, but on that specific category, they were getting zero. And I think it's same kind of case. I suppose if I wanted a more politically popular bill, I would have made sure that everybody got more, right, that there wasn't these, an example like Mr. Lyason, because I like Sitka, and I always vote for their hydro money and other things. But, you know, I'm sorry it came out that way, but it's probably the problem that they do have fairly low taxes over there. And, you know, I don't know why that is, and everything, but that's kind of the way it came out. But Mr. Eliason is making the assumption that what they got in the first place was right and deserving and the way it ought to be. And I don't see it that way, because that's why I introduced the bill, is I thought there was some need for restructuring revenue sharing on a different basis. And so it's going to affect communities different. If it didn't affect communities different, I wouldn't have needed to introduce the legislation.
Mr. Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with the comments of the speaker, who was the previous speaker. I think what is important, if we're interested in protecting our own areas and making sure that out of this legislature they get treated fairly, I think it's important to note that what we call revenue sharing, the formula that we call revenue sharing, is just one way that we actually share revenue with the municipalities in the state. By my count, and I just did a quick tabulation by memory here, and there may be something that I'm missing, but by my count, we have in the current budget, we have revenue sharing that is that goes straight to the municipalities that they utilize for whatever purposes they deem appropriate. We have $321,300,000. And this bill is $31 million if you count the hospitals in it. So this isn't the only way that municipalities receive money. And when we do this, most of the legislation that allows us to share revenue with the municipalities is done by a formula. And you can't really, just as you couldn't in the foundation formula, it's very hard to get complete equity, because first of all, there's disagreements as to what that means, but secondly, a formula that tries to treat everybody the same way when there are different circumstances in the state, it's very difficult for that to really work. And as the speaker pointed out, Ketchikan in the foundation formula got zero increase in the equalization part of that. But in talking to his superintendent of schools, who was very upset about that, we found out that they had, if you count, they got a zero increase and their percentage went down, but the total amount of money the state was putting into that municipality was more than they would need for that school year's, that year's budget. So if you add in the local share, so they weren't going to have to cut their budget. They just thought that in that bill they were being treated unfairly. My municipality thought the same thing. I think Fairbanks felt the same way. What's important, I think, is how in total that they're treated, and you win in some formulas and you lose in others, and as long as your area is not losing in every single formula, which might be possible, and I think would behoove people to look at the total picture, because there could be some areas that are losing in every single formula. But I know that Anchorage, although they feel very strongly that they're losing in this particular formula, because their percentage is being reduced from 46 to 44 to 36. Okay. Their percentage is being lowered, but I think that, you know, if you look at the totality, Anchorage is getting not a prorated share based on population, but a pretty decent portion of that $321 million. And I think that other people should look at the total picture, because you'll fight to the death on this one, but there's a lot of them incorporated in the budget that you're not even looking at that send money all over the place. And the municipalities, it all goes to the same general fund of the municipalities, and they can spend that money, even though it comes in for police protection, they can spend it on something else. It comes in for roads, and they can spend it on sewers or whatever. So very, very few of those dollars are actually dedicated to something. And so I think it's important that that everybody look at that total picture, and I would agree with the speaker that this is a pretty decent bill, and it does improve the formula. The old formula made little sense. And this is a very vast improvement over.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we have a brief at ease?
House, please come back to order.
Mr. Speaker.
Question has been called. Mr. Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I don't like to belabor this any further, but I might just draw your attention to the fact that out of the five different proposals we have here, my community is going to have a decrease in funding in four out of the five. The only community that receives that type of treatment, and I think it's patently unfair that we're changing the revenue sharing system, that we're penalizing those who are running good state good city governments, good boroughs. We're penalizing those that have been a part of the system for years and been conservative. I think that my concern, Mr. Speaker, is not with the smaller areas. I certainly understand the need for increasing revenues in those areas. They certainly need it and they deserve it. But I know I have a little bit of a problem when you increase funding from in the large communities. I mean, with people of 20,000 or more, where you go from 500,000 to 1.5 million. In areas that are really wealthy, that are really have a good tax foundation, they have a good tax base, they have a lot of employment, and they're the ones that are getting a 300% increase. And if that's fair, Mr. Speaker, I don't believe it is.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, we don't have Solomon here, and we have a problem that might require the wisdom of Solomon. This state has the widest range of divergence with regard to local government entities than any other state in the United States and possibly any other jurisdiction in the North American continent. I think I almost certainly we are, with the exception of some of the northern areas of Canada, the only area that still has virtually unorganized areas, rural areas, and the wide range that we have all the way from an unorganized or semi-organized village all the way up to the unified borough of Anchorage and back again. And I think that if anybody were to apply any standard of fairness and say that in theory this standard of fairness is an agreed-to standard of fairness, there's no way you could draft a bill, change the current law, or come up with an amendment to this bill that then is not going to tilt with regard to some other equally arguable standard of fairness because of the wide diversity of communities that we have. I intend to vote for the bill. I have some of the same concerns that the other members from Fairbanks have. I know it's a compromise, and I think considering finite time available to the legislature in this session, it's the best compromise we're going to get coming out of this House. We may well have some more work to do on it when it comes back from the other body.
Mr. Parker.
Mr. Speaker, of course I'm a strong supporter of this bill, but I can understand my friend from Sitka's problems understanding the complex formulas, and especially since he's not a member of the committees that handle the bill. So I wondered if you'd ask the clerk to read one more time the CRA report on House Bill 192.
The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is at House Bill 192 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 192 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Parker, Chairman. Signing do pass unless amended, Parker. Signing do pass as amended, Parr, Metcalf, and Jaroff, and Branson. Signing do pass if amended, O'Connell. Signing no recommendation, Carney.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes, just to correct, I think, a misinterpretation by the member from Sitka. He said four out of the five computer runs there, Sitka lost money. The only one that will, the only way this bill will take effect is if the fifth one goes into effect, which is the $31 million. That is to say, unless we have enough money to fund the fifth plan, this bill will not take effect. So Sitka will not lose money regardless. There's no way that Sitka would lose money under this bill.
Is there further debate? The question before the body is the final passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 192, amended by the House. Members may proceed to vote. Would you announce that, please?
I can vote for Gardner and for Anderson if they'll tell me how they want their votes registered.
Record me as voting in favor of this bill.
Representative Gardner is voting in favor of the bill.
Anderson
is voting in favor of the bill.
Should I lock the roll?
Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll?
It's all right. It's locked.
Do any members wish to change their votes? The clerk may take the final roll.
26 yeas, 10 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 192. Finance, amended by the House, has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Lacking 27 votes, I move the effective date clause, which is the conditional effective date clause referred to by Representative Rogers.
A question before the House is the adoption of the effective date clause. Is there, the members may proceed to vote. Mr. Gardner. Mr. Gardner has indicated a yes vote.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Anderson has a yes vote.
30 yeas, 4 nays.
Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Zaroff?
Mr. Speaker, my light isn't working up there, but mine is a yes vote also.
Can he change his by himself with his vote?
Okay. Anderson is still voting yes on the effective date clause. I don't know. Will the House please be at ease? Will the House please come back to order? In order to avoid any confusion on the passage of the committee substitute for House Bill number 192 amended by the House, it would be my opinion that we void the roll call on adopting the bill and have a voiced roll call on the adoption of the bill and also the effective date clause. So at this time, the question before the House is the adoption of committee substitute for House Bill number 192 amended by the House, and I ask the Chief Clerk to call the roll.
Barnes?
No.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettesworth?
No.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz?
Yes.
Carney?
Yes.
Chatterton?
No.
Cotton?
Yes.
Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason?
No.
Freeman? Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Halford? Haugen? Hayes?
No.
Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
No.
Meekins? Metcalf? Miles?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Montgomery?
No.
Moss? Munson?
Yes.
O'Connell?
Yes.
Osterbach?
Yes.
Parker?
Yes.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Nay.
Randolph?
No.
Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Jaroff?
Yes.
Gardner?
Yes.
Mr. Anderson?
Yes. Do any members wish to change their vote? Would the clerk please announce the roll?
25 yeas, 9 nays, 6 excused.
Do any members wish to change their vote? And committee substitute for House Bill number 192, amended by the House, has passed the House. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, lacking 27 votes, I move the effective date clause.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause for committee substitute for House Bill number 192 amended by the House is adopted.
May we be at ease, Mr. Speaker?
The House, please stand at ease. Majority Leader Pro Tem has pointed out that we do need to have a roll call on the effective date clause.
Barnes?
No.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettesworth?
No.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz?
Yes.
Carney? Chatterton?
Yes.
Cotton?
Yes.
Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason?
I guess so.
Freeman? Freeman? Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Halford?
Yes.
Haugen? Hayes?
Yes.
Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
No.
Meekins? Metcalf? Miles? Miller?
Yes.
Montgomery?
Yes.
Moss? Munson? O'Connell?
Yes.
Osterbach?
Yes.
Parker?
Yes.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Randolph?
No.
Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Jaroff?
Yes.
Gardner?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Thirty-one yeas, 4 nays, 5 excused.
Do any members wish to change their vote? If not, then the effective date clause and committee substitute for House Bill number 192, amended by the House, has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on the... House, please stand at ease. Let's come back to order. Mr. Osterbeck.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Maybe we revert to introduction, I guess.
Under introductions,
Mr. Osterbeck. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, we have Joanne Holmes, Administrator Assistant from the Aleutian Preble Filing Association. She lives in Anchorage. And a couple of my constituents, Phil Tudikoff, Board Member and Chairman of Unalaska Profit and Nonprofit Corporation, and from Akatan, Nick Burskin, Board Member of Aleutian Preble Filing Association.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also an introduction of guests. In Gallery B, there is a lady who came down to testify on one of the HES bills. Her name is Audrey Annas of the Orthopedically Handicapped Action Group. Ms. Annas.
Would the chief clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill number 648 by Malone and Duncan, an act relating to fire prevention. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is at House Bill 648 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 648 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parker, Chairman, concurred in by Parker, Carney, Parr, and Jaroff. The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 648 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 648 Finance and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, McKinnon, Smith, Guy, Montgomery, and Haugen. Mr. Speaker, I have two committee substitutes on my desk.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 648 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, the committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance, will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Are there any amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Speaker, if there are no amendments, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance, is considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to fire prevention.
Question has been called for. The question is final passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a brief explanation of the legislation. The legislation is introduced in an attempt to provide incentives for the installation of fire protection systems, specifically hydraulic sprinkler systems, because there is information that shows when those systems are installed in commercial buildings that the total fire costs in the community drop, and the bill provides mechanisms for incentives in basically in three different ways. Number one would be a not to include in the tax base the value of the fire protection system. Number two, to provide a prohibition against extra standby water charges for buildings using these types of systems, and number three, to incorporate, make specific provision incorporating loans for fire protection systems in the state commercial and tourism loan programs. The legislation's it is endorsed by the Fire Marshals and Firefighters Associations and the by the State Department of Public Safety. The fiscal note on the legislation is reported out in the Finance Committee substitute is zero.
question before the body is the final adoption of committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance. The clerk may take the roll.
Barnes?
Yes.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettesworth?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz?
Yes.
Carney?
Yes.
Chatterton?
Yes.
Cotton?
Yes.
Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason?
Yes.
Freeman? Fuller?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Halford?
Yes.
Haugen?
Yes.
Hayes?
Yes.
Hurlburt?
Yes.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Malone?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Meekins? Metcalf? Miles?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Montgomery?
Yes.
Moss? Munson?
Yes.
O'Connell?
Yes.
Osterbach?
Yes.
Parker?
Yes.
Parr?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Randolph?
Yes.
Rogers?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Jaroff?
Yes.
Gardner? Anderson?
Yes. Has any member failed to vote? Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk announce the final roll.
34 yeas, no nays, 6 excused.
So, committee substitute for House Bill number 648, Finance, has passed the House. Would the clerk read the next item on the agenda?
House Bill number 863 by Munson, Duncan, and Rogers, an act providing for a task force on fire prevention and control and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 863 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 863 and recommends it do pass, attaches a letter of intent and a physical note, and requests that it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Halford, Bettesworth, Randolph, Osterbach, and Brown. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 863 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 863 and reports it back with individual recommendations and a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, signing Dupass, Guy, and Rogers. Having no recommendation, Freeman, Schaefer, McKinnon, and Smith. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Commerce Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for the motion to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 863 is passed. Are there amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one by Mrs. Munson. Page 3. Line 10, change date in line to January 1, 1983. Date in line 10 to January 1, 1983.
Representative Munson.
Yes, this was, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This was just a mistake. It should have been.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker, you need
Mr.
a motion.
Brown. We do need a motion for the.
Oh. I move the amendment.
Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Munson, no one objected to your amendment.
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Munson.
I also need to amend line 15 to read 1983.
Mr. Speaker, can we have an at ease for that purpose, please?
The House will be at ease. Come back to order. Representative Munson. Would you please read the next amendment?
Amendment number two by Mrs. Munson. Page 3, line 15. Change date in line 15 to January 1, 1983.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This, again, was an error. Move the amendment.
Did I hear you move the amendment? Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number two is adopted. Are there further amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Speaker, if there are no further amendments, I move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill number 863 be considered engrossed and advanced to a third reading and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 863 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage. Is there any debate?
I better read it. Committee substitute for House Bill number 863 amended by the Commerce Committee, an act providing for a task force on fire prevention and control and providing for an effective date.
Representative Munson.
Just a simple, thank you, Mr. Speaker, just a simple explanation. This bill is probably about 10 years too late. In Alaska, we have doubled the United States average in life and dollar loss from fire. In 1979, there were 27 deaths with an estimated 29.5 million loss to real and personal property due to fire. The fire deaths, the Caucasian deaths pretty much equaled the United States average of 27 deaths per million population. Indian, 210 deaths per million. And the Eskimo, it's 600 deaths per million. Although quarterly runs are currently being done, we do know that for 1980, the first quarter of it, there has been 14 fire fatalities. Versus 9 fire deaths last year at the same time. 11 of those 14 deaths occurred in rural areas. Is this an acceptable loss in Alaska? Generally, the only time fire ever receives any particular attention is when its losses are catastrophic, and except for the rare example, the mine soon wipes out any recollection of these incidents. I believe the fire prevention is the primary target for any concerted efforts to reduce Alaska's fire losses if there's to be any marked influence on the fire problem. The task force would provide a comprehensive analysis of why and how Alaska has become the nation's leader in fire loss. At the present time, there are 10 pieces of legislation pertaining to fire service issues, and yet no one state agency is responsible for setting policy. The task force would analyze what is currently being done in fire prevention and control and determine what needs to be done to prevent the material and human losses occurring in Alaska today. A comprehensive study of the state's fire protection system is vital to Alaska's well-being, including marine fire safety, wildlands fire control, aircraft rescue, arson, industrial, commercial, and residential. Fire protection is a local responsibility, but the state can assist by implementing a state plan to facilitate local responsibility for fire protection. I believe a state-focused fire prevention and control master plan is needed and indicated. The task force should be the catalyst for this needed effort.
The question is, excuse me, the final passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 863 amended by the House. The clerk, please call the roll.
Barnes?
Yes.
Byrne?
Yes.
Bettesworth?
Yes.
Branson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz? Carney,
yes.
Chatterton,
yes.
Cotton,
yes.
Duncan,
yes.
Eliason,
yes.
Freeman,
yes.
Fuller,
yes.
Guy,
aye.
Halford,
yes.
Haugen, Hayes,
yes.
Hurlburt,
yes.
McKinnon,
yes.
Malone,
yes.
Martin,
yeah.
Meekins, Metcalf, Miles,
yes.
Miller,
yes.
Montgomery,
yes.
Moss, Munson,
yes.
O'Connell,
yes.
Osterbach,
yes.
Parker,
yes.
Parr,
yes.
Phillips,
yes.
Randolph,
yes.
Rogers,
yes.
Schaefer,
yes.
Smith,
yes.
Jaroff,
yes.
Gardner, Anderson, yeas, no nays, 5 excused.
So House Bill number 863 amended by the House has passed the House. Mr. Brown?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on committee substitute for House Bill number 863 be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, the roll call on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 863 amended by the House is considered as a roll call for the effective date clause. The Chief Clerk, please read the next item on the agenda. Mr. Freeman. The House, please stand at ease.
Thank you.
Would the Chief Clerk please read the next bill on the calendar?
House Bill number 917 by the Resources Committee, an act relating to foreign trade zones and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 917 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 917 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Halford, Bittesworth, Randolph, Osterbach, and Brown. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, because some question has arisen about the bill and people want to look at it for one day, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 917 be held in second reading until tomorrow's calendar.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 917 will be held over in second reading and on tomorrow's calendar. See, that completes. Oh, no, we do have citations remaining. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move the citations on the current calendar for today.
Hearing no objection, the citations appear on today's calendar will be adopted. At Mr. Duncan.
Speaker, I'd like to be shown, probably Representative Miller also, as co-sponsors on the one honoring Epsilon Sigma Alpha.
Hearing no objection, Representative Duncan and Miller's names will be added to the citation. Mr. Brown?
Ms. Speaker, unless someone objects, I think this may be appropriate. I'd like to move that the citation honoring Mrs. Grace Butrovich be shown as sponsored by all members of the House in addition to the Senate.
Hearing no objection, all members of the House will be shown as sponsors on the citation honoring Grace Butrovich. That completes our daily calendar and moves us to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to be brought before the House? Announcements of, I would like to move back on the calendar to reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Commerce is at House Bill 552 relating to the highway from the Yukon River to the Arctic Ocean under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 552 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Halford, Bittesworth, Randolph, Osterbach, and Brown. House Bill 552 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 972 relating to legislative procedures under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 972 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Fuller, Parker, and Gardner. Martin has no recommendation. House Bill 972 has a further referral to Judiciary. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Under announcements of committee meetings, Mr. Brown.
Speaker, can we go back to unfinished business for a moment?
Under unfinished business.
Mr. Speaker, because I think it might be derelict in that we have one of the participants of the in the Arctic Winter Games representing Alaska as a page on the floor of the House, I would move that the citation by all senators honoring the participants in the Arctic Winter Games also be shown as sponsored by all members of the House, even if he only did get a silver medal.
Hearing no objection, all members of the House will be shown as sponsors on the citation honoring participants in the Arctic Winter Games. Under announcements of committee meetings, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, at 1 o'clock today, repeat 1 o'clock, the House State Affairs will meet to discuss House Bill 1013, I believe, a special appropriation to approve a loan to the White Pass and Yukon route
And we'll also have the language of the two resolutions also relative to the White Pass. They've finally been drafted in a satisfactory manner. And we'll have those before us, too. It'll be a very short meeting. I think we can get out in a half hour, but I will ask the members to be here at 1 o'clock. Mr. Speaker, I, too, would like to ask you to return to unfinished business for one brief piece of business.
Under unfinished business, yeah. Mr. Moore.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to, at this time, waive referral to House Bill 63, proposing an amendment to the uniform rules permitting committees to meet by teleconference. That would go to rules for an actual rules meeting and recommendation. It's HCR 63.
With the permission of the chairman, HCR 63 will be waived to rules committee. Under announcements, Mr. Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee 3 this afternoon, House Bill 183, Public Disclosure of Contractors and Contracts, House Bill 751, Rights of Faculty, University of Alaska.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee will be meeting at 1:30 today in the House Finance Committee room, and theoretically, in this order, we'll be taking up House Bill 962, allowing credit fisheries taxes. House Bill 1002, Special Appropriation Fish Business Tax. House Bill 961, Alaska Commercial Fish and Agricultural Bank. House Bill 969, Salmon Fisheries Enhancement. And House Bill 970, Special Appropriation for Regional Aquaculture Association.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House yes will consider House Bill 805, construction of disability section of the Valdez School at 1:30 this afternoon.
Representative Bettesworth.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I want to announce that the Interior delegation is having their noon luncheon. I realize it's late. We have a couple of people who want to talk to us, but down in House Judiciary Room on adjournment.
Mr. Miles.
House Resources will meet today at 3 o'clock on House Bill 851, the Energy Conservation Bill, and on House Bill 560, Energy Conservation Bond Bill.
Mr. Brown.
Speaker, tonight at 7 o'clock, the House Commerce Committee will meet on Senate Bill 112 relating to corporate dissolutions. And if we have a bill available yet from the drafter, we'll look at our bill on the sunset extension and partial deregulation on the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. Then tomorrow morning, Mr. Speaker, at 8 o'clock in the morning, we'll consider Senate Bill 111 relating to life insurance policy loans, Senate Bill 136 relating to the plumbing code, and other bills that have been previously before the committee. There may be action taken on them.
Are there further announcements? Representative Hayes. Are there further announcements? Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on the committee substitute for House Bill 192.
Your notice of reconsideration on House Bill 192 is noted. Are there further announcements? Special orders. Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In view of the fact that it's getting late in the afternoon, I will not make any speeches on my energy bill, but I'd like to tell the group that I will tomorrow. Thank you.
Are there further special orders? Mr. Brown.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adjourn until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.